Welcome into the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Great show today, folks. Really excited about today's show. We have an old friend with us, and we are going to talk monsters today. As a matter of fact, I have the book right here. It is called Chasing North American Monsters. My guest today is Jason Offutt, a good friend of the show, who is back today with a great book. And folks, this is, I'm going to call it a series now, because obviously this is a continuation from a book that he had done previously. It's just a continuation, only it's better. And I'm going to tell you how it's better here in just a moment. Jason Offutt teaches journalism at Northwest Missouri State University. He's the author of four previous books on paranormal topics, included Haunted Missouri and Paranormal Missouri. In addition to several novels, he's been interviewed on Whitley Strieber's Dreamland, Destination America, Banal of America, of course, this program, Darkness Radio. By the way, thanks for including that in the bio there, my friend. The Paracast and other prominent paranormal podcasts. By the way, you can catch him at jasonoffutt.com. We have a link in the description of this program as to where you can check out everything Jason Offutt. And by the way, there's a very prominent person who writes the foreword to this book. We'll talk about it in just a second. Oh, this is a gorgeous book and a wonderful book at that. Chasing North American Monsters. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome back to the program Jason Offutt. Jason, hi.
Hey, Tim, Dennis, always a pleasure, sir. Great to be on. I appreciate the invitation.
The pleasure is all ours. First of all, I got to tell you, I absolutely love it. I have very few favorite authors that I, whenever I get the notice that, hey, you know what, there's a brand new book out, you're one of them that I absolutely look forward to sitting down and reading the book, because I know, one, I'm going to get a rich sense of humor, and two, I'm going to get some really good food references. So, and I'm going to get some good references for restaurants throughout wherever you're making reference to. And three, I'm going to get some of the coolest stories of wherever it is you're researching. So I look forward to all
of that. It's all the things I like. I can't help but inject humor, because I'm a lifetime smart ass, and I love food. Okay, so I'm giving good food references, and I'll give you one right now.
Yes,
not
please.
In any of my books,
please.
But it's in Minnesota.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's in Bemidji.
Really?
It is Dave's Pizza.
Yeah.
It is the best pizza I have ever had in my life. You have to show up early. The door opens at 5. You got to show up an hour early and wait outside in line for it to open, or you're not going to get a seat.
Really?
The owner of it, I can't remember his first name, but Findessen's his last name. He was the captain of the, I think, 2004 American Olympic curling team.
Really?
And I had a really good conversation with him.
So the owner,
it is just a fine place.
The owner's not Dave.
No, he bought it from Dave.
Okay.
Originally, the owner was Dave, but it's not Dave.
It's not Dave. Dave's not here, man. See, Dave's not here, man. It's a Cheech and Chong reference.
Yeah.
Wish I got a figure.
Yeah, that's in my wheelhouse. I get that.
Okay. All right. Good. See, we're off to a good start. So I'm incredibly impressed, because I'll tell you this much. Whenever you put right on the front cover of the book, forward by Lauren Coleman, you know you're swinging for the fences.
How could I not put forward by Lauren Coleman on the cover?
But then you actually get Lauren Coleman to
yes.
write the forward.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't have put it on there if I didn't get Lauren. Lauren agreed right off the bat. He's an extremely gracious man, and I so appreciate the forward that he wrote for me. And he delved into the name cryptozoology and where it came from. And I'm not going to say any more. I'll let Lauren's words.
Yes,
you know, lead the way.
Yes, it's a wonderful foreword by Lauren, and of course there's reference in the book to one or two of Lauren's cases there as well. It's, you know, when you talk about heavy hitters, when you talk about people in this field that, you know, not only should be revered, but people that I think you should put on that pedestal and keep them there. Lauren Coleman is one of them, and you know, to have that somewhat of that gravitas sign off on the project, that's something special. So, and I think appropriate, because Let's face it, Jason, you've put together a project here that, you know, when we say cryptozoology, you get the big three or four that are thrown out there, and then everybody forgets about everything else, right? They just kind of throw it out to the side, and you go, oh, okay, well, those are the creatures, and then we move on. But then you forget about the other creatures that are out there. And when you crack this book, and it's a nice thick book with all kinds of stories, you go, well, I never knew about that, or I never heard this story, or I didn't know that this region had so many rich stories and creatures and characters. And you get lost in the stories and you go, well, man, that's really cool, or that's different. Or how would you ever come across thinking that that would be associated with this? Right.
Right. Well, you had mentioned in your introduction about this was the second book in a series, and you got that absolutely right. The first one was Chasing American Monsters, and it just covered the United States. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, you know, I've got to mention Mothman. I've got to mention Champ, you know, from Lake Champlain. I've got to mention Momo and, you know, the Skunk Ape and a few of these. But I also wanted to get monsters that people really hadn't heard of before. And when it came to Chasing North American Monsters, I was really able to dig deep and get a lot of monsters that people have never heard of before. Sure, I've got, you know, monsters like La Llorona, you know, down in Mexico that we've heard before. But I also have monsters like the Grafton Monster, you know, from West Virginia, that unless you're from that area, you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to open people's eyes to a lot of new creepy crawlies.
All right. So we may throw a few of these out here because and talk about them this hour, because I tell you, there's some creatures in here that they have some funny origins. And at the same time, you talk about them and you go, well, really? There's a few that I maybe, you know, lacks as far as the words go. There's a few we know, obviously, that we'll bring up and just kind of take a cursory look at. There's a few we've never heard of before that you may just go, oh my gosh, that's weird. How would you ever come up with that? Why would that even be a legend? Or where does that even come from? The one that, and I'll start off with an odd one, out of Louisiana. I'll start in the Americas. We'll work our way out. The Wild Girl of Catahoula from Louisiana.
Right.
Which sounds like someone I might have dated in college.
Right, right. I'm sure everybody has a Wild Girl of Catahoula in their dating history. This was... And a lot of things that come out of the 1800s are absolutely bizarre, and this is one of them. This was around the area of, or this is in Catahoula Parish. For those of you not familiar, they don't have counties down there. They call them parishes. Mm-hmm. And in 1886, a teenage daughter saw, this teenage daughter of a guy named Jack Francis, was outside and saw a wild girl. Naked, greasy, long hair, dirty, and holding a knife. And the wild girl ran off, and people started seeing her and chasing after her, sometimes chasing after her on horseback, and she could outrun the horse. And the knife, after a number of different sightings, always grew, and it later became a sword. No one ever caught her. Whether or not she was alive or real or not, I have no idea. But it's kind of fun to think of some naked woman running around with a knife. That makes me feel very comfortable when I go to bed at night.
Yeah, and the fact that she's, you know, tiny. At sometimes she's dressed, at other times she's not. Mm-hmm. But the alarming thing is she's a little hairy.
A little hairy.
Yeah.
Well, and it depends. One time she was. She was reported running naked, of course, as she was holding a knife and having a pig tucked under her arm.
Yeah,
So she's
yeah.
strong too.
Yeah, well, you gotta like them strong. I mean,
People like them strong.
yeah, in case you want them to do chores and you know you want to just kind of lay back and be lazy. She's got the knife, she's got the pig, she's brought dinner. So that's the way I kind of looked at
Right, yeah.
it. I read that story and went, oh yeah, she kind of reminds me of a few of my college dates. She's kind of fun. She's fun at that. I'm trying to find the name of this particular one, but there's one in I believe in the Mexico region where she lures you in with her milk-filled breasts, and I don't remember her name. I just remember the legend, and it was particularly
Yeah, Tula Vija.
Yes,
I'm
that's her. Yeah.
absolutely, I'm sure I butchered that pronunciation.
That's okay. No,
I'm
that's fine. Yeah.
right, it's a story of a woman who sits by the water's edge. She has full round breasts because they're full of milk. The story is when she was young, she fell in love with a guy in the village. Before marriage, she got pregnant. And her, life of woe afterwards. She gave birth to a boy and killed it in the river because she was unmarried and had child. But the villagers were upset with her, so they ended up killing her, throwing her into the same water that she killed the infant in. And after that, she has been seen by the side of by the side of the river and offers her services to any men that pop by. And if the men that pop by actually take her up on the offer of breast milk, she transforms into a monster. She's kind of half woman, half hawk, kind of a harpy looking thing.
Attractive.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
You're into, I mean, I don't know, people always really have gotten the hots for mermaids. I don't know, what's the difference between a harpy and a mermaid? One's got feathers, one's got scales. I'd say give the harpy a chance.
Well, and I'll get to that here in a second because there is a place where you'd never think there'd be a mermaid where there was one. And then the thing that really threw me off here is there's actually a body of water where you can get pregnant.
Oh,
Yeah.
yes. Oh, God, I'm not remembering the name of it, but it's just one town. There's it's supposedly a lizard man lives in this pond in this Mexican village. And if you go to this pond, if you're a woman who go to the pond to wash your clothes, chances are you might come back to the house pregnant. This happened during Spanish occupation, and Spanish soldiers would go to this pond and water their horses. And so a lot of husbands finally realized, wait a second, there's not a lizard man impregnating these women. They're fooling around with the Spanish soldiers.
I was going to say, I don't think the lizard man is just popping up out of the water and going, hey, want to get it on?
Yeah. Hey, baby.
Speaking of, you'd said mermaids. One of the places I find it highly unusual or highly unlikely that there would be a mermaid would be in North Dakota. Can you tell us a little bit about Misty and why? And I'll give you my skepticism after you give us the story of Misty.
Okay, North Dakota, man, I'm having a
Oh, that's okay. And
yeah.
I can dial it up here too. I know that.
Oh, the Lake Sacagawea Mermaid.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, there we go. Yeah, that's a heck of a name, Sacagawea.
Right. Now, okay. Now I'll give you a little of my skepticism here for a second here, Jason. Now, in North Dakota, now keep in mind here in Minnesota, as you know, it's plenty cold, all but maybe 4 months of the year. And as you point out so brilliantly in the book here, Chasing North American Monsters, I've got it right here if you're watching on video. In Minnesota here, we have, they say 10,000 lakes. It's more like 11,000. But they're frozen. most of the year, right? So if there's a mermaid living in there, she's pretty chilly. Or not, if not, she's frozen most of the year. But Misty supposedly lives in North Dakota. Now there are some lakes in North Dakota, true. But if you think it's cold here in Minnesota, it's damn frozen in North Dakota, right? And as you point out in the book, North Dakota was the home of the electric dryer. Because you can't hang stuff out on the line in North Dakota. You just can't do that.
Right, because it'll be all icy.
Right. So if you can't hang your laundry out in North Dakota, you probably can't have a mermaid living in your lake. But supposedly, Misty, this mermaid, lives in North Dakota.
Right, in Lake Sakakawea, which is a... It's got, it's a 382,000 acre lake. Got big fish in it. It's got sturgeon that are up to 16 feet long. So it's a pretty nice size. But one of the things that gets me about this story is the fact that the lake is a man-made lake.
Yeah.
Yes, there's water coming in from a river, but still, it's a man-made lake.
Yeah.
The mermaid is... and this was it from 1956 that the dam was built by the Corps of Engineers. And this mermaid, my computer just froze on me, but that's all right.
Well,
the mermaid, if I remember correctly, got shut off from its lover. If I remember
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. By the dam. And, If I was the mermaid, I would probably be a little bit ticked off by the Corps of Engineers, but apparently she's not.
Right, right. Yeah, if I remember, and I think you're right, she's a bit of a spurned mermaid. Spurned Mermaid is a great band name, by the way. but when it comes to, in fact, I'll bring it up here in my copy of the book here. Yes. Lake Sacagawea, 382,000 acres, almost 180 feet deep, as far as that goes. She isn't bitter towards humans who imprisoned her for keeping her from her lover. But people have reported her singing at night and seeing a light in the lake, believing that the mermaid is blessing the creatures who live with her in her prison.
See, that's a sweet story.
It is, yeah. And aw. But I don't
but
know.
Yeah, I do kind of agree there. Well, we also have a mermaid from Alberta, Canada. That's a little bit too cold as well.
Which is really cold.
It's super cold up there.
Yeah.
I'll accept the Bigfoot stories, but not right. The Banff mermaid.
Right. We can get into Bigfoot and Wendigo next if you want, because those are Wendigo is an incredibly interesting story to me. But let's talk a little bit about Bigfoot. Actually, one of the funnier Bigfoot names is actually in the southern U.S. is Nobby. I thought Nobby was an incredibly funny name for
Nobby
Bigfoot.
Is funny.
Yeah.
I think Booger is another funny name.
Yes, Booger is another funny name. Yeah. Yeah, but you're right. I can buy Bigfoot and in the northern climate. I know we have one, more than one here in Minnesota. In fact, not too far north away from me here, supposedly up in the northern suburbs in Minnesota here in the Minneapolis area, they have one roaming a golf course, is what they say.
Kind of surprises people when there are Bigfoot reported inside large cities. And I don't really find it that odd because there's generally usually a waterway in or out. And a lot of Bigfoot researchers think that Bigfoot probably follows rivers.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, these places aren't without trees. You said a golf course, there's plenty of places it could hide when the golfers are out doing whatever things they do. I'm not a golfer. I realized years ago when I tried to golf that I could get pissed off at home for free.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So yeah, I don't go out anymore.
Well, before the Sharko foot, I loved to golf, but now it's kind of hard to do it on one leg. You end up swinging and end up falling down
right.
A lot, and that's kind of frustrating. But other than that, you know, it's a fun sport. But yeah, and you know, and there's a lot of water around golf courses, of course. So, you know, there's a lot of systems for them to hang out around. Of course, if you're stocking ponds, then yeah, there's stuff for them to eat. And you tend to build those golf courses around natural habitats anyway. So yeah, there's a lot of things for them to hang out around and be around. And there's a lot of deer around golf courses too. So there's a lot of food there too for them.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. In our town, we've got deer that walk around the town. I would really, where's Bigfoot? I mean, he could be in my neighborhood. I just don't see him.
That's true.
If you're out there, big hairy guy, come see me.
Yes. Yeah. We'd like to shake hands. Not really. No, that would scare the hell out of me. I don't know. Would you be comfortable with a meeting with Bigfoot?
No, of course not. There's no way. Well, and here's why.
Okay.
This is my reaction to all the people complaining about photographic evidence of Bigfoot.
Yeah.
How come all the pictures are fuzzy? How come, I mean, everybody's got a camera on their phone. You know, why aren't there more pictures? If you are in the wilderness and this 8 or 9 foot tall, 800 pound, hairy, stinky beast is 20 yards from you, are you going to think to reach in your pocket and pull out your phone and hit the camera app? Or are you going to get the hell out of there?
Right.
You're going to run away.
Right.
You're not going to take his picture. And if you are taking his picture, you're scared to death.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but okay. So I know, Jason, I don't know if I've ever told you this before, but I have little wild chipmunk buddies, right? That are kind of tame.
I've seen the pictures.
Yeah. Okay. So when I try to take pictures of Spud, every time I take out my iPhone, it pisses me off, right? Because I try to, like, here's a little picture of Spud, right? The other day, you know, I'm hanging out with Spud.
Hey, little guy.
There's Spuddy. And when I try to take pictures of Spud, my iPhone goes out of focus before I can focus in on Spud. I always have to tap the screen to focus in on Spud. So imagine, and Spud's quick, you know, Spud's darting back and forth, and Spud doesn't stand still and go, hey, let me take a pose for you while you take a picture of me, right? Spud doesn't know what I'm doing with my phone in my hand, right? So I can't imagine Bigfoot is standing there going, hey, take a picture, you know, and waiting for you to take a picture, you know. And I'm sure, you know, your phone goes out of focus. You go to take a picture of Bigfoot. Even if you are quick with your phone, if you're some sort of phone pro, I'm sure it takes a moment for the phone to focus in. By the time you go to take a picture of Bigfoot or take video of Bigfoot, the thing's gone.
It's right. Gone. And this is why, and I teach photojournalism. I used to be a professional photographer. I know a lot about cameras. And I trust the fuzzy, out of focus pictures of Bigfoot more than I do one that is completely in focus.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's. I tell you, and I've been snapping photos for. I mean, I was a photo editor on my high school newspaper. I've taken high speed photos of sports events and gotten some stuff you could put in Sports Illustrated, and I couldn't snap a photo, a clear picture of Bigfoot if you paid me.
Yeah. Yeah, same here.
Yeah, I don't know how people could do it out in the wild. I have no idea. I don't know. I don't even know how you'd begin. And I go to my nephew's hockey games, and I produce brilliant shots of my nephew's hockey games of him skating around at high speeds. I still
don't. Hockey's hard.
Yeah,
it's hard to shoot.
Yeah, it's hard to shoot. But I don't know. I still don't know how you get great shots of Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. So. Good luck to you if you're trying to do
maybe
it.
Maybe they, you know, the Minnesota Stars need to recruit Bigfoot.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. No, they're not. They're gone. Who's playing?
It's the Wild, my friend.
It's the Wild. The Stars are in Dallas, right?
Yeah, they're in Dallas. Thanks for that.
That was a long
memory time
ago. Yeah. That's all okay. Right. It's football season.
Yeah, that's right. It's Viking season. JJ McCarthy. Go JJ. Yeah. By the way, did you see that game the other night?
No, I unfortunately I didn't. I didn't Fortunately, I didn't get to see my Chiefs play on last Friday.
You didn't want to. Yeah. It was,
I didn't want to anyway. Yeah.
I didn't
want to.
Yeah. That's okay.
For anybody out there thinking I'm a bandwagon guy, I'm from the Kansas City area.
That's
and
right.
my very first sports shirt was a Lynn Dawson jersey when I was five.
Wow. Look at that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, your Chiefs trampled my Vikings back in Super Bowl III. So
yes,
yeah.
yes, they did.
Yeah, they did. So
I don't remember it at all.
I don't either. I was an itch in my father's pants at that point. So that's about as graphic as we'll get on this program today. That's for sure. Well, I tell you what, we'll take a break right here. Speaking of an itch in my pants, and we'll come back. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about other creatures that are out there. I also want to talk about a creature that's native to Minnesota that I didn't realize, although I have a funny story about, that may be in my backyard. According to one psychic on this program, is in my backyard and watching me. I don't know if I believe it or not. I got to get your opinion on this.
All right, I look forward to hearing it.
But this is the book right here, Chasing North American Monsters. Jason Offit is with us today. And when we come back, we'll talk about some of the different characters and monsters in this book, because there may be one in a state near you, there may be one in an area near you, and there may be one you want to go visit, whether it be in Canada or Mexico. It may be in this book. Folks, this book is amazing. There's some great stories in here. There's some great food in this book. I can't tell you, there's some great food in this book as well. And of course, Jason brings some great stories and some great humor to this book as well. I highly encourage you to get it. We have a link in the description of this program. It's available right now. It came out September 8th. So I encourage you to go order this book right now. When we come back, more North American Monsters with Jason Offit right here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow and Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. My guest, Jason Offutt. The book is right here, and it is a good one. It's called Chasing North American Monsters. The foreword on this book is written by the one and only legendary Lauren Coleman. So, by all means, I want you to pick this book up. I want you to check it out. It's not just your typical Bigfoot, typical Chupacabra, typical Loch Ness monster, although Loch Ness is in Scotland, so I don't know what he'd be doing in North America. But by gosh, folks, there are some interesting cryptids in here, interesting monster stories, interesting legends in this book. And of course, it's brought with Jason Offutt's sense of humor, and it's brought with some interesting food locations too. So I'm telling you, it's an interesting travel guide as well. Jason Offutt's with us today. And Jason, I teased that we were going to talk about something that may be in my own backyard. You take us throughout the United States as well. Is there really a dog man in my backyard? Because there's a psychic that says there is.
Yeah, well, there's a story that came out in 1999 in, I'm going to completely butcher this name, Faribault.
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 Minnesota.
Yep.
Faribault. All right.
Faribault.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, there was a man was driving in a forest through the trees late at night, mm-hmm. and he saw a wolf. And the thing that was strange about this wolf is it was over 6 feet tall because it was standing on its hind legs. When he got close to it with his vehicle, with his truck, it ran away on its hind legs. There have been other reports, 2009, near Fergus Falls, which is a town of about 14,000 people. A man stopped on a road out in the country to watch deer, and all of a sudden, a 7-foot-tall bipedal wolf ran at the deer. There have been a couple of other reports, one near Long Prairie. But yes, there have been multiple reports of a dog man, more like a wolf man, hanging around Minnesota.
Although I gotta say, when you look at the illustration here in the book, that is the cutest darn wolf man ever.
Don't you just want to scratch him behind the ears?
I do, yeah. I want to bring him kibble and watch him do tricks. I mean, he's so cute. Look at him.
He's a good boy.
Look at that dog man. Oh, he's so cute. Look at him. I mean, he's got a gorgeous coat. I'm just saying.
Eats a couple raw eggs now and then. Get that coat shiny.
Yeah. I mean, I'm
wondering. So a psychic told you.
Yes.
Did by your backyard was your area or literally in your backyard?
No, literally in my yard. What she told me was that I have a dog man, which scared the hell out of intern Yoko. but I have, because she's definitely afraid of dog man. But that I have dog man watching me. Now, here's the interesting thing, Jason. On a night, I think it's a raccoon that's out in my yard. But every once in a while, and I can't explain it, although I think it may be a bear because we have bears in this area too. Every once in a while, I have a birdhouse that's in a bush that my finches and my blue jays go and get peanuts out of. That house will be knocked completely out of the bush, and it is secured by a brass pipe, and it gets knocked completely off the moorings.
Yeah, that's no raccoon doing that.
No, and it's not a squirrel, because a squirrel hops up in there and eats too. And that squirrel, mm-hmm. that squirrel's like a small dog. I mean, it's a fat squirrel. It eats a lot. I mean, it's, and that raccoon's probably the size of a medium sized dog too. So, I mean, it's secured in there. But it knocks over, I have like a small table for the finches that they eat at. They eat lunch every day at, and it knocks that table over every day, and it knocks the birdhouse over about twice a month. But I've been told that dog, and it only happens when the food is in short supply, or it eats everything and then it knocks everything over. Like, give me more.
Yep. But well, I would be more leaning toward a bear than I would be a dog, man, because what kind of food would you have out there for squirrels and birds that a dog would want to eat?
The only thing I set out there is sunflower seeds and peanuts.
All right, I can see a bear going after those, not so much a canine.
Right, yeah, that's what I'm thinking too.
Right.
Yeah.
Or it could be a dog man, and the dog man's just a jerk.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, he's like, hey, bring me more, and then knocking stuff over. But I was told by the psychic that dog man's watching, and he's very pleased. He's very appreciative of the fact that I take care of these animals. He thinks that that's very kind, and that I'm a very kind person, and he's very pleased. That's all I've been told.
Let me give you this, Tim, and I want to hear back from you on it.
Okay.
Instead of putting some pig peanuts and sunflower seeds out there, put a pound of raw hamburger.
Okay.
And then see what happens.
I was going to go milk bone first. I wanted to work my way up, Jason. I didn't,
I see, go big or go home, baby.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and maybe the good stuff. Maybe go to Von Hansen's. Right? Go to the butcher shop and get the good stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Go ground round instead of,
we don't want that, 70-30 hamburger garbage. No. Get the ground round.
Yeah, get the ground round. Go out there, give them the good pound of meat. And then put a little bow on it and say, to dog man. So that
he'll be your friend for life.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we can make friends, and then he'll really love me. And then that way I can go out and, when I'm late on garbage day, I can go out in the middle of the night and put the cans out and not have to worry about it. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then I know.
That's
that,
right.
Then I know when
you
I hear.
You got to look at the bright side of things.
Right. So when I hear growling at 2 a.m, when I'm bringing the cans out, I know that dog man loves me, and he won't jump out and kill me. That's a good thing. Speaking of jumping out and killing me, what is a duppy? I've been to Jamaica, I heard about, this man, that man, the duppy. What is it? Because
when it comes to legends in the Caribbean, a lot of them are West African legends that came over during during the slave trade. A duppy is a spirit. There are in Jamaica, they believe that a human possesses two spirits.
Okay.
A godly spirit that when you die you go to heaven, and an earthbound spirit that stays with the body. The earthbound spirit might become a duppy. Okay. 3 days after death, The earthbound spirit is connected to the body. 3 days after death, it can transform into, if you've been a bad person in life, it can transform into a man or an animal and do awful things.
Really?
To people. Yeah, they can terrorize. They terrorize people in the shape of a man, a human. They can. They've also been known to go and bankrupt people.
Really?
Go to the bank and screw you over. Go make love to your brother's wife. Do all sorts of things like that. Those are the bad ones. There are also good duppies that can take care of people, but you got to watch out for those bad duppies.
I guess, right? Jeez. Well, I know now to stay away from duppies. That's for sure. Yeah, I heard it said a couple of times when I was there, but I didn't know what it was. That's for
sure. it's always a good idea just to put a stake in whenever somebody dies, put a stake in their heart. Just be done with it.
Yeah. I mean, good practice. You know, we learned something from The Walking Dead. I mean, they put the knives in the brain, but, you know.
Right.
Yeah, it's all the same.
Either one's good.
Yeah, you got to finish them off. That's for sure. That's for sure. Speaking of zombies, you put them in the book, and that's a very real thing. But zombies supposedly are a very real thing, at least in the Dominican Republic and in that area, right?
Right, right. I mean, this is where the Hollywood zombie came from. What zombies are is a human that a witch doctor or shaman has poisoned. With certain drugs, what the drugs do is dulls their senses, so they're really susceptible to suggestion. And another drug that is used slows down their heart rate enough to simulate death. Okay, then people mourn, they have the funeral, they bury the body, and then the witch doctor, the bruja, the wizard, the witch, goes and digs up the body and keeps it on the drug that makes their mind more susceptible to suggestion, and they treat him as a slave. There was one, I'm going to butcher the name again, Clervius Narcisse. Sorry about the pronunciation.
It's okay.
But this guy died. He fell ill. He died. He was buried. And 10 years later, he shows up in town again. And his sister's like, wait, you're dead. Well, what happened was he had a story of what happened to him. And the bruja who had been giving them these drugs all these years hadn't given him the drug. And his brain cleared up enough to where he made it back home. And it was proven to be him. So, yeah, zombies are a real thing. They're not undead. They're just really high as they're baked.
Wow.
Yeah.
Scary, though. Incredibly scary.
Oh, right. Because you've got your mind taken from you.
Yeah. 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 Oh, my God. Ugh. You know, we've talked on this program before about different variations of werewolves. But everywhere, it seems like everywhere from Canada to the areas of the Caribbean to even Mexico, there's a form of werewolf. I guess the funniest one is Quebec, the Lugaru. It seems like it's the cousin of the Rougarou. But the Lugaru is one that you put in the book in the Loup-Garou area of Quebec. But it's actually a shape-shifting monster that appears as a man. Tell us a little bit about werewolves and why it seems to be this overreaching type of monster that goes between cultures.
With the Lugaru and the Rougarou down in Louisiana, of course, are both French. The French werewolf, the legend of that came around with the Beast of Gévaudan back in the, I believe it was the 1600s. People were reporting wolves were a problem in Europe back in the day, because they would, you know, not just kill livestock, but if somebody was out in the woods, they might kill that person too. And there was a story around the Gévaudan area in France of this extremely large wolf that had started not just killing livestock, but had killed a number of people. And they went to hunt it, and they never could catch it. And the king got word, and he sent his best huntsman out to find it. And a couple of large wolves were captured, but they didn't have human remains in their stomach. And they were just wolves, big wolves. But eventually, it got blamed on a werewolf. And that legend, what ended up happening is people figured that it was either a hyena or a lion. That, because a lot of Europeans didn't know what a lion looked like.
Yeah.
Back in the day. But, you know, maybe in a aristocrat's private zoo that they brought, and it had gotten loose. But that's where some of the French, you know, werewolf stories came from, of these monsters that had to be supernatural. And they were able to change from human to werewolf and back again. That's why they couldn't be caught, because they were people. At some times.
Interesting.
So when the French came over to the United States, when they settled the areas in Canada of Quebec and down in Louisiana, the stories came with them. The fun thing is there were also werewolf stories in Germany. So in German populated areas in the United States, we had werewolf stories there too, like in Texas and Oklahoma. It's the stories of shape-shifting animals, or people shape-shifting into animals, is common world round. In Mexico, there's a were-jaguar story. There are were-leopards in Africa. Down in the Amazon, there's a were-dolphin.
What?
The were-dolphin, they have pink freshwater river dolphins, which are, they look kind of cool. But one night a month, or maybe it's one night a year, they transform into a handsome man and walk into town during this night of celebration and schmooze and pick up girls just to have sex.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Now, does that have anything to do with people thinking that maybe the dolphin may itself be an alien? I mean, is that have anything? Is that like some sort of a cross story?
No, the reading that I did on that, aliens never came up.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. You know, because, you know, there's that belief that people think that dolphins kind of de-evolved from aliens, that maybe aliens decided that, you know, they were going to adapt to the water and became dolphins. But I don't know.
Once a month, they just get really horny and come back on land.
Yeah, and come back on land and become men, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But that's kind of a different story. I don't want to say
it is a different take. And one of the things about all of these were creatures is I think the fact that they're human. They can be human. They can at least appear human and will take us by surprise when they change into their true form. Like the Lugaroo and the Rougarou, they do about the same thing. They're people. They wander around the city and near the outskirts and try and get someone to come help them or follow them or take them somewhere. And when they get to someplace quiet, like an alley or maybe, you know, a park, then they transform into the beast and eat them.
Do you think the psychology behind humans becoming animals becoming humans is something having to do with the mistrust of nature and the unpredictability of nature?
I don't know if it's the unpredictability of nature, but a human turning into a beast is the unpredictability of man.
Ah, okay.
Because I'm not afraid of animals out in the wild. Of course, I've never run into a bear or a mountain lion. I know those would scare the hell out of me, but animals don't scare me. People do.
Yeah.
Because we can never tell what a person's true intent is until they act upon it. I know what that deer's going to do.
Yeah.
If that dog is growling at me, I know what they're intending.
Right.
You know, hell, a rattlesnake tells you right off the bat if it's upset.
Yeah.
Okay, but a human being doesn't until it's got you where it wants you.
Very true. Very true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A human can always have a dual intention, whereas an animal really doesn't.
No, I mean, and look at all of the people who, like serial killers, who people didn't think, you know, were bad. Like Ted Bundy had a normal life. The BTK guy down in Wichita,
Dennis Rader.
He was, mm-hmm. He was married. He had a family. He was a Boy Scout leader. You know, he was the treasurer at his church. Nobody suspected anything, But then he did have true colors that would be shown. Those people are monsters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Werewolves just, need a flea bath every once in a while.
That is true. Speaking of flea baths, Chupacabra is one that comes up quite often. And I think, we get the basics with Chupacabra, goat sucker. And you think, okay, well, is it just a dog with mange? Is it, it gets the typical stereotypical brush that it's painted with. But is there anything different we should know about Chupacabra? Is there something different that's out there?
Yes. Yeah, there is. But you mentioned dogs and coyotes, and even I think a couple of raccoons with mange were purported to be, this is a Chupacabra. I found it on my land. No, it's not. But the Chupacabra story goes back to 1995 in Puerto Rico. A woman named Madeline Tolentino saw an animal outside her house that she didn't recognize. And it was about 3 to 4 feet tall. It was bipedal. It had long arms with three-fingered claws, long, thin legs, webbed feet, and spines that went down the back. And she saw this, and it ran off when she saw it. She claims that her mother saw it, the local pastor saw it, and a couple of people standing by saw it at different times. It was never caught. It was never photographed. But the one interesting thing is, in Puerto Rico at the time, the movie Species with Natasha
Hentridge,
maybe? What?
Hentridge? Hentridge?
Something like that,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Had come out, was released in Puerto Rico. And this involved Natasha, who's a beautiful, beautiful lady, an alien that came down looking to mate. And whenever she attacked and mated with a human, she would turn into something with the spikes on the back that looked a whole lot like the Chupacabra that Madeline reported seeing.
Really?
So was this a case of potential hysteria? Maybe. I find the Chupacabra one of the least believable cryptids out there. Mm-hmm. Although all the reports of animals, rabbits, chickens, geese, even up to sheep, goats and sheep, having puncture marks and no blood in their body, something's got to be doing that.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that there's no such thing as a Chupacabra, but I'm a little dubious.
There's throughout the book, and it doesn't matter what area of the Americas we go to, there's talk of brujas or witches. What is it about witches or brujas that is so enticing, or what is it about that it's in the lore?
That people can do things. Well, a couple of reasons. One, people can do things that normal people can't. If you can throw in spells, for one thing, some witches can fly. There was a case in Mexico. Can't quite remember the name of the city, but a police officer put down on his report. He was down in this bad area of town, and something was coming at him, and it was a person flying in the air, and he got scared and took off, and it kept up with the car, flying right next to him. I mean, jeez, that's a superpower.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an interesting part, but also a lot of it has to do with Christianity.
Okay.
There were a lot of tribal indigenous practices involving mostly medicine, trying to, blessing warriors going out or hunters going out on the hunt, maybe, trying to make rain happen. A lot of normal nature worshiping things. But as soon as Christianity came around, that was evil. That was all the work of a devil. So that's another aspect that spurs the interest in witches and warlocks and wizards.
The other thing that people seem to be unnerved by, and I know this is something that you yourself have come across in your
clowns
research. Yes, clowns.
Yes, clowns.
Clowns.
I'm chlorophobic.
Are you really?
Yeah, well, they freak me out. I don't know if I'm scared of them, but they freak me out.
You know, my stepsister, we had an experience. I didn't know this until she was a teenager, but I took her to one of the haunted houses, and they had a clown section. Mm. And to me, I just think they're silly. But she collapsed in a heap. I mean, like, scared, could not move. I had to scoop her up and in my arms and carry her out. Yeah, and that was the first time I ever I figured out that she had this complete. I don't. What did you call it again? The phobia.
Chlorophobia.
Yeah.
Chlorophobia.
Yeah, that was the first time I found out she had that. Totally didn't.
I don't fault her. I mean, I'm not that bad, but they seriously give me the heebie-jeebies.
Oh, she completely broke down. I mean, just collapsed to the ground and was shaking. And like the actors that were around stopped and backed away. I mean, it's not the first time they'd seen it.
Yeah, I bet. Well, there was a study I read a few years ago about this. And one of the cases that they pointed out was a hospital in England, the ward where the children's ward. They wanted to, you know, paint it up to make it look nice and cheery. So they painted clowns with balloons, and the kids were unnerved, and they finally figured out it was because of the clowns, and they painted it some neutral color, and kids were fine after that.
Yeah. I wonder, is it because of the duality? Is it the paint? Is it, what is it about a clown that unnerves people?
For me, and I think a lot, the same with a lot of people, is you don't know. It's just like the monster, the human monster. You don't know its intent. You don't know its motivation. And it's even more on the, you know, sort of on the surface, because they tried to hide it by putting makeup over their face. And they're trying to lull you into a sense of ease by painting a smile on.
Okay. Yeah.
Just don't forget, John Wayne Gacy was a party clown.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. I mean, kids have no idea who John Wayne Gacy was or what he did. But yeah, that's the thing. He did. He lulled people in with a sense of, you know, a sense of ease, but then took advantage of them. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, he's another one of those serial killers that everybody thought was a stand up guy. He, you know, was a business owner. He did charity work. To the extent that there's a picture of him with Nancy Reagan,
right,
honoring him for his charity work. And it's right. Like, okay, you're right next to the first lady. You got to be normal. No, definitely not. You've hit it well.
Yeah, he tried to make himself look like something he wasn't. Yeah, that's for sure. And that was his entire MO. Speaking of it, I want to take it to that monster that represents itself like a child. There's something called, the Duen in Trinidad Tobago. You have a picture of it here. It looks like a small child.
Right. Small child with a big hat.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Duen. They're small. And this is something else that fascinates me. Every culture seems to have stories of small people, and they tend to be very similar to each other. But I'll get to that some other time. But yeah, these, and this is something also strange in the Caribbean and in Central America. A lot of these creatures have their feet backward, and the Duwin are one that have backwards feet. And what this does is they're able to hide, because when they walk, people think that they're going the other way. So if someone's, because their feet are backward, they leave prints.
Yeah.
And people think they're going this way. I'm going to avoid that, so I'm going to walk this way. But no, you're walking right into them.
Oh, that's bizarre.
They have backwards knees and feet. They always wear a hat, a big hat that you saw, for the main reason is that they don't have a face. These are children that weren't baptized. Again, Catholic influence.
Right. Why is it that in most cultures, they have some sort of small child, I don't want to say monster, but small child influence that is there that scares us? Is there something about innocence being turned unpure that scares us?
That's why I've always thought with the black-eyed kids, why these entities appear as children asking for help, because an adult is more than likely going to want to give help to a child.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We want to help children, but I'm getting closer to thinking that there are actual little people. Because, okay, throughout Europe, we've got elves, trolls, brownies, sprites, pixies, tomties, goblins, hobgoblins, all these different types.
Yep.
They basically do the same thing. They will do some ornery things around your house, tie pets' tails together, curdle your milk. However, if you give them, leave out beer and some kind of food, that makes them happy. Yeah. So they might do something and they might bless you. Sometimes, though, they will steal your children and replace it with one of theirs that's sickly, referred to as a changeling.
Yeah.
There are stories like that in various cultures in Africa. There are stories like that in cultures in Asia, Australia, South America, Central America, and North America. They're all diminutive people between 2 and 3 feet tall. They will either help you or they will hurt you. A lot of times they're armed with bows and arrows, and they're either magic or they know how to use poison. But if you treat them well, they'll treat you well. It's one in Mexico. I can't remember the name, but they if you treat it well and leave it beer and food, it will take care of your farm for you. I'd say that's worth it.
Yeah, yeah.
But why is everything the same worldwide? I don't know.
Right.
However, back in the early 2000s, I think, maybe as late as 2008, in Indonesia, on an island in Indonesia, there was a legend the local people had of the Ibu Gogo, which means in their language, grandmother who eats everything. And they were a 2 to 3 foot tall humanoid that would live. They lived in caves. They would come into their villages and try to steal children that they would eat. All right. And then when, Western people showed up, they're like, oh, that's a cute story, but it's just a story. And then in, like I said, the early 2000s, cave system was found that had 2 to 3 foot tall human skeletons. And they even, it's a new branch of humanity. They named it, the island was Flores. So they named this Homo Florensis. Uh-huh. And that's as tall as they got, maybe 3 foot tall.
Wow.
So was this a false story the indigenous people had? Doesn't sound like it. Right. It sounds like they really had these diminutive humans that were doing bad things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the funny part about it is science nicknamed them the Hobbits just because of their size.
So they just took it right from Tolkien.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Two more, and then I think we'll let people go get this book and enjoy it, Jason, because it is quite the book, and it's an interesting book at that. Over 250 creatures from Greenland to Guatemala, boy, it's a wonderful book.
Actually, it's from technically it's from Greenland to Panama. But they the publisher wanted to go with the alliteration.
Yeah, alliteration's good. I like alliteration. Yeah, it's great. I want to talk about real quick the Thunderbird of Bridgewater Triangle.
All right, Bridgewater Triangle is an interesting place.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of Bigfoot encounters, lots of UFO encounters, people with missing time. Big lizards, mm-hmm. all sorts of other fun things. We have triangles all over the world.
Yeah,
Bermuda, Alaskan, Japanese, the Sea of Japan. All, but anyway, this one involves a thunderbird. Thunderbird's another animal that did exist. It actually existed at one point, known as the Territorn. It was megafauna that lived during the Ice Age. And they had a 20-foot or 22-feet long wingspan, which is the size of a small plane. It was that big. The Native Americans called it the Thunderbird because the beating of its wings sounded as thunder. But there have been a lot of reports of Thunderbirds around the country. There's a lot of space around North America that we don't go to. Could there be a surviving pocket? I'm wondering if not, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so this one is in a swamp. There's a Hockomock Swamp, which is a freshwater bog. And there was a story in 1988 of a couple of boys finding enormous three-toed footprints in the swamp. And they were curious, and they followed them. And when they finally saw what made those footprints, and they found an enormous bird standing on the ground. And when it saw the boys, it took to the sky, again with the beating of thunderous wings. And the kids went home scared to death, because why wouldn't they be? And, of course, the police said it was a blue heron. Blue herons are big.
Yeah.
Okay? They have a 6.5-foot wingspan, not quite 22 feet. But that wasn't the only one. There was, in 1971, there was a bird that was reported to be 6 or 7 feet tall with huge wings. So a couple were seen in the Hockomock Swamp. And, you know, why not? Why not?
Yeah. The controversy as to whether the Thunderbird is actually a physical being, a spiritual being, it's an interesting controversy as to whether it's one or the other, right?
Well, here's how I view all of these things with Bigfoot and Thunderbirds, and any time people go to explain them as something spiritual or interdimensional, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Fine, they may be, but I want it proven that they are not a flesh and blood animal before I'll go over here.
Yeah, true, true.
That's where I stand with that.
Very true. Last thing I want to talk about today with you, Jason, is although you have it listed here in one chapter in Virginia, it's also listed in other chapters as well. I just love talking about it in general. The devil monkey is one of my favorite creatures to talk about. Tell us a little bit about the devil monkey.
Well, it is interesting, because could monkeys live in North America? Absolutely. There was a man who wanted he bought an island in Florida and wanted monkeys on the island, and he wanted to have it as a sell tickets for people to come and see the monkeys on Monkey Island. And the monkeys he got, he didn't realize that they swam. So they made it over to the mainland, and there's monkeys living in the Everglades. And the bad thing is they've all got herpes. I'm not making that up. So there's a bunch of herpes monkeys living in the Everglades. But could there be packs of these devil monkeys resemble baboons? Maybe somebody who owned some exotic pets might have released them. I don't know. But there are a number of states. You mentioned Virginia. There's a report up in somewhere in Canada. Florida, they've been reported. They've been reported in Ohio. But devil monkeys seem to attack small livestock, because why wouldn't they? Bamboos eat meat. Why not go for chickens?
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of sounds like a chupacabra, but these devil monkeys don't drink the blood. They just devour everything.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We actually had monkeys that lived here in North America at one point, but not nearly as big as baboons. The problem with the baboon theory is, if there were enough of them for people to see, the monkeys would attack the people who see them.
Yeah.
A pack of baboons is vicious.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're not shy. They're not shy.
And they're not shy. Well, look, there are plenty of stories I always see coming out of South Africa about people having to do more to barricade their homes, because the monkeys keep finding ways of getting in,
right,
and raiding their fridge.
Yep.
And they also have been known to get into cars if the cars aren't locked, pop the trunk if there's groceries or anything inside,
yep,
and steal the food.
Yep.
So yeah, if we had packs of baboons running around North America, they'd be more obnoxious.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But I love that they're called devil monkeys.
Yeah, me too. It's a great name. One, if we ever start a band, it's either going to be Herpetic Monkeys or Devil Monkeys. I think
Devil Monkeys.
Yeah, Devil Monkeys.
Depends on the genre.
Yeah. Well, what kind of band will we have? Is it going to be rock, metal, or alternative?
Metal, baby.
Okay.
If it's Devil Monkeys all the
if
way.
It's metal, it's Devil Monkeys. I think if it's an alternative band, it's got to be Herpetic Monkeys.
Yes.
Yeah.
Completely agree.
Yeah. I think that's a great alternative band name is Herpetic Monkeys. So, yeah. Yeah. The book is right here, folks, and it's a great one. It's Chasing North American Monsters, a guide to over 250 creatures from Greenland to Guatemala. Although, let's face it, if you're going to chase anything to Guatemala, maybe it should be some good food. And you can get plenty of good recommendations from Jason in this book. The foreword is by Lauren Coleman. By all means, it's worth the price of admission just to get the foreword alone in this book. But there's so much more. Again, 250 creatures. And if you think you don't get all 250, I dare you to pick up the book just to count them all. That's my personal challenge right there. But Jason, I want to thank you so much for being with us, my friend.
Oh, hey, Tim, I really appreciate it. And as you mentioned, that being part of a series, the first one was Chasing American Monsters, where I covered the United States. Here I cover all of North America. And next September, 1 year from now, Chasing the World's Monsters is coming out.
Oh.
It's already written. Cryptozoologist Adam Davies wrote the foreword. And I'm really excited for that to come out. I put the subhead volume one. I hope that sticks.
Yeah.
Because I've already collected enough monsters for a volume two.
Nice. All right. Well, we will have you back for Chasing the World Monsters. That's for sure.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
Pleasure's all mine, my friend. That's that indeed, indeed. Well, folks, that's going to do it for this week. Again, a couple of reminders. As long as we're chasing monsters, why don't we chase some other things around the world? Get together with our friends at Mysterious Adventures Tours. You can go chase some stuff on Halloween with Dacre Stoker. You can go over to Romania and go spend Halloween with Dacre Stoker at Bran Castle and celebrate Halloween at the place that inspired Bram Stoker to write Dracula. So there's that. You've got that on tap. Also, Brian J. Cano will be in Ireland to celebrate Halloween, the place where Halloween started. You can celebrate with Brian J. Cano at the Pooka Festival in Ireland. Those two trips are available now by Mysterious Adventures Tours. We have a link in the events section at darknessradioshow.com. You can also get the link in the description of this program. So check those out. That's available as well. Also, there is a sign up for a paranormal cruise to France. That's available. The sign up for that in June. Brian J. Cano, Grant Wilson, and I believe it is Dustin Perry. Those are the three featured celebrities, paracelebs on that cruise, and Darkness Radio sponsoring that cruise. So go sign up for all that stuff. That's in darknessradioshow.com in the events page. So that's all there. Let's see, what else? Darkness Radio's app. The Apple app is up, available, and is, it's available right now. If you don't have it on your Apple device, by all means, download it. If you haven't updated it as of yet, update it. The brand new iPhone is coming out, I believe, here at the end of the month. So we're going to have to update the app as well. Get ready for that. Get ready for that update that is coming. So folks, get ready. New iPhone. I think 26 is the next iOS that's coming out. So bear with us because there may be a transition here as far as that update comes. So we'll let you know as far as that goes. Also, if you're listening to the show on audio, but you're not watching the show on video, well, then shame on you. Go to the YouTube page, The Original Darkness Radio, and watch this show and like and subscribe after you're done watching the video. If you don't know where to watch the show, it's real simple. Go to darknessradioshow.com, click on the show you're interested in, and the video and audio are all in one place. It's easy to do. Go ahead and do that. Also, as I said, we're at the weekend. Going to be a great weekend this weekend. Fall weather is moving in, and it is absolutely wonderful outside. There may be a Renaissance Festival in your area. Be sure to grab a friend, neighbor, or a loved one that is disabled or elderly. Take them with you. Go have a good time out there, but also take somebody who might not be able to get out there with you. And take them with you. Have a good time with someone who is disabled or elderly who would like to get out of the house with you. It's a message from your friends here at Darkness Radio. All right, we're out of here. Have a good weekend. Again, be a light in someone's darkness this weekend. Help somebody out who's disabled or elderly. And we'll see you next week for the best in paranormal podcasting. For Mally Fox, for Jessica Freeberg, for Travis, and for Beer City Bruiser, I'm Tim Dennis. Thank you so much for watching and listening to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, The Podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.